Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k.
Welcome back, everybody, to the podcast. I am Chris Seveny, and today we are going to dive into some major real estate investment trends that we've been tracking through the first 2 months of 2025. As I'm recording this, we are at the beginning of March. You might not hear this till later on in the month, but today I want to talk about three main themes. The first theme that we are seeing in the real estate space is cash-poor, equity-rich property owners. And this is creating a big opportunity for investors who are out in the space. Next, we are going to talk about the continued rise in defaults across all asset classes. And what does that mean for note investors? And last but not least, I'm going to talk about why you should not trust the media. Now I'll go into a little bit about the narrative around the Washington D.C. real estate market, which a lot of the videos online I've seen on people's favorite death scrolling apps are talking about the demise of Washington, D.C., which, to be frank, is far and few in between from what we are seeing, where I'm located here in Northern Virginia, a stone's throw over the bridge to Washington, D.C. So let's dive in first and talk about the cash-poor, equity-rich 2025 investment landscape. So what is happening right now, and what are we seeing in the space? We're seeing many homeowners and investors, especially, sitting on a ton of equity. They bought properties in 2010, 2015, 2020. So those properties have appreciated significantly, but they're struggling with liquidity due to inflation, stagnant wages, and higher borrowing costs. And in many instances, they've already borrowed once and maxed up to about 75% leverage, which is what most lenders on investment properties go to cover a lot of the expenses. And as again, you've got taxes and insurance in some jurisdictions are just crushing people. So what do you do when you're sitting on 30, 50% equity, but you can't access it easily? And what's also prohibitive to them is that, you know, a little thing called interest rates, which are significantly higher than when many of these investors may have locked in a DSCR loan or other type of loans at 4, 5, 6%, because we're still seeing those loans starting with a 7. Now, in some instances, if you got really good credit, low loan to value, you can get them back down in the upper sixes, again, as of this recording, but most of the people are still seeing them right around 7% or higher. And the other component to this is the banks are tightening lending standards. Now, HELOCs, cash out refinancing, is much harder to obtain today. Trying to get a HELOC on investment property is nearly impossible. So there's opportunities out there, especially for funds like ours that are debt funds, to step in and try and assist. So let's talk first about the homeowner owner-occupied space, where borrowers have fallen behind on their payments, but do have that equity for a positive resolution. As you know, if you've listened to us, we typically work directly with borrowers to try and get them on repayment plans, restructure and modify the loans, and then rework them and turn around and sell that on the secondary market. If you've watched any of our past webinars, we have tons of information on kind of how we do this. Go to our website, 7einvestments.com, learn more about that. Now, as we start to see those borrowers in trouble, typically it means there'll be more inventory, which we are seeing. More inventory typically means more supply versus demand, a little bit better discounts. Now, because these borrowers have this high equity position, it's a better chance that you'll be able to work something out with them. Because where can they go? They can go rent, but rent is still real expensive. The struggle or challenge they have is the taxes, insurance, and just the cost of owning that home. Tack on the fact that they may have had temporary job loss. You know, we've talked about the reasons why people sometimes go into default and they just don't wake up one morning saying, I'm not going to pay today. Death, disability, job loss, divorce, you know, any one of those. But it does open up the opportunity as we see going forward be a stronger opportunity than we've seen over the last 5 years. Since COVID and a significant uprise in the amount of money put into the markets, no, we haven't seen defaults. They've been all-time lows. Now, we've seen them, but not like we saw in 2017 or 18, which at that time was still pretty historically low or below the average. So I saw a report FHA loan defaults, I think, are over 10%. Don't quote me on that. I saw it on Facebook. So it's just sharing what I've seen. But I wouldn't be surprised because it's more common, the less down payment, the higher rate of defaults. Now, with these defaults coming up across the board, most people have seen it and heard about it in the commercial space. I think everybody can read a real estate and commercial office is hurting. Multifamily several years ago kind of had its doom and gloom. Mobile home parks, self-storage, again, lost self-storage are getting affected. What hasn't been affected yet and is starting to, we're seeing the cracks, is the single family homes. Not only because people are falling behind because of taxes and insurance, and people stretch their pandemic era spending and overstretched and racked up credit card debt, that those rates are now significantly higher. But property values. Property values aren't going up 20% per year, which, you know, I know newer investors were thinking, oh, this is going to continue. It's not. You know, Southwest Florida, Texas, other parts of this country, you're seeing from the peaks 10, 20% declines. Washington, D.C., yes, you're seeing some softening. Not like it's being reported, but we'll talk about that later. But we're finally starting to see it in the single home space, single family home, and that includes investment properties, short-term rentals. As people, you know, buckle their belt a little tighter, and people are realizing, hey, if it's just a small group, you know, I'd rather stay in a hotel and eat at restaurants than have to cook while I'm on vacation. We see it in the single family. We've already talked about the multifamily. You know, those landlords are facing the squeeze of higher costs. The insurance is just crushing people as we continue to move down this path. There's stagnant rents now in markets. The supply that was coming online in some of these major markets is now in oversupply, which the absorption rate, which is how long does it take or how many units can they fill per month, is slowing down. And of course, we also have the regulatory hurdles that make it harder to evict non-paying tenants, depending on the state you're in. Of course, commercial, we've been talking about that for a while. Office market continues to struggle. Now, federal government and a lot of other organizations back to office in those spaces, which should reduce those record high vacancies in some cities. But commercial office, I think, is going to recover, but it's going to take several years. And it's just a matter of owners of these properties, do they want to hold on to them through that time, or are they just going to let them go? I mean, you've seen some of the biggest firms in the country just letting certain office spaces go. We talked a little bit about 70 and what that meant for us in these opportunities, but also just everyday known investors. You know, I get asked constantly, people calling me, emailing me, reaching out to me on Bigger Pockets, Reddit, some of these other sites, Facebook. What does this mean for us? You know, I believe there's going to be more inventory in the distressed debt market. We've already seen it, and it continues. Over the past several weeks, there was a $600 million pool that we saw. I just got, literally Friday night, another $50 million of investor loans gone bad. Us as a company just closed on a multi-million-dollar portfolio of non-performing loans. So that was a challenging due diligence process. We hope you're enjoying this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. We wanted to take a moment and tell you more about our passive income fund at 7E which is open to both accredited and non-accredited investors. Our latest offering targets an 8% annual return distributed monthly, with the ability to potentially achieve a greater return through our bonus share program. If you'd like more information, reach out to us at invest@70investments.com to learn more. Thank you. But it was fun, just a lot. You know, it was almost 30 loans and took effort and work. And I got to thank Larissa on my team for, of course, you know, really leading the charge on that. But while there's going to be more inventory, when I started 8 years ago, it was easy to get into space buying loans $5, $10, $20,000. That's not really the case anymore. You still see some of those, but very, very little. And the reason being is the appreciation of homes. And a lot of the loans now that were 10 years ago, 15 years ago now, in some of the certain areas of the country, you could buy a house for 30, 40, 50, 60 grand. And they'd write loans on those, and a lot of those would come back through the pipeline. Today, it's very rare. Take Flint, Michigan. I bought a home for $500 in Flint at one point in time, not too long ago. That same home today is probably $80,000 to $100,000. I don't miss not selling it. I'm glad I did. But somebody's got a good amount of equity in there. And you know that inventory, the banks and lenders, they're going to want to offload this. A good example that I can share is we recently, at this pool we acquired, the lender really wasn't experienced in managing non-performing loans. So they wanted to get them off their books. Weren't bad loans. They didn't have the manpower of the people, which created opportunities for us and others in the space to acquire these loans at that discount. I think the major thing people got to realize is you have to have the ability to be patient. Rather than overpaying for real estate, you know, step in and make sure the numbers make sense. I think that's the most important thing for people. So let's roll into our last segment, which I'm going to say, don't trust the media, the DC real estate doomsday myth. Now, those who have listened to me in the past, I don't like to get into political discussions. Personally, I think there are problems with both parties in real estate. So I do not, you know, only say one side is great, the other side is awful. I'm down the middle. And you will rarely, if ever, see me post anything politically because my focus is on my business, my family, my personal well-being and health. If you've been watching the news lately, you've heard fear-driven headlines, Washington, D.C. real estate's collapsing, office space is dead, property values plummeting, 14,000 new homes have come on the market in D.C. And I chuckle because first off, they were pulling in like Baltimore down, I don't know, probably down to Richmond, which are very, very different markets than DC. Now, DC is basically, they call it the Beltway. 495 runs a circle around DC. And then that's really what I consider DC Metro. Now in Virginia, it can go out to the airport in Loudoun County because of all the expansion and the government that's been out there. Same thing on Maryland, may push out a little bit towards like Annapolis and stuff, but you know, it's not as wide as people think it is. Now, let's separate some fact from fiction. Yes, the office market's in trouble. That doesn't mean the residential real estate is struggling. Single family homes in DC are still in very high demand. Government jobs provide economic stability. Now, there's everyone, oh, the government's getting rid of everybody. It's actually, you know, most people who work for the government, you know, don't have two people working, and it's pretty easy. I'll rephrase this. It's easier to find a job in this region than probably many other locations. There's such a limited new housing supply. Again, I'm inside the Beltway in Virginia. At the top of my street, a house just went on the market a week or so ago for just under $2 million and already gone. Homeowners who locked in low mortgage rates, you know, it's really not forcing sales. But I want to kind of just share some numbers. DC condos, they've struggled for, you know, last 2 years. Okay, Russell Brazil, who big on Bigger Pockets, runs one of the local, I think he's president of a real estate board, was in one of major magazines or newspapers and, you know, really talked about what's going on and recommend just Google Russell Brazil on real estate and we'll talk about him. But, you know, really the media is just thriving on negativity because it gets the clicks. The panic and sell discount due to fear headlines isn't happening. But smart investors can use it to an advantage. But what's really happening is markets are adjusting, not significantly in this area, And I'll, you know, everywhere, I think we're going to start to see softening or flattening, because if you look at affordability, is like a home price is way up here and people can only afford like here. So I don't envision people's salaries getting brought up. You know, the only way to balance that is over time. This is going to come down slowly and this is going to go up slowly, and it'll get back to kind of the happy medium, which is probably going to take a few years, which my personal belief is probably going to see lower to stagnant home prices for, you know, probably the next 2 to 4 years. That's my opinion. But, you know, it's interesting because I did look in, and again, I'll take data from one of the public sites, and drew a circle in Virginia around that beltway. And there was, at the time I did this, around 1,000 properties for sale. And only about 30% of those were single family homes. And I think it was like 15% of them were less than $1 million. So everything else was above $1 million. So to give people kind of the idea of, you know, it's no different than areas of California, New York, Boston, you know, you'll see some fluctuations in one $20 million home sale when there's very minimal sales in certain areas and really skew numbers one direction to the other. But the reality is, it's February, March in this area. We finally get good weather. I can go outside and go for a walk. So people start to put their houses on the market. That's pretty normal. My word of advice, don't believe the hype sometimes and look into the data, because you also don't want to step in and buy something thinking that the market is completely panicked and then basically let it stay stagnant or it does go down a little bit. I'm not saying market's not going down. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is media is making it perceived like it's a falling knife and the sky is falling. So let's, final thoughts as we close out this episode. Some key takeaways from today. I do believe the cash poor, equity rich borrowers are going to create major opportunities for people, and those who have capital, I think, will be able to step in and create win-win solutions. I truly believe that is going to be the case. It has been the case in some of the commercial side of things over the last year plus, but now we're starting to see that on the residential side. I think defaults are rising across all asset classes and opening the door for deeper discounts on mortgage notes. This pool that we just acquired, we acquired it for a very good price. Now, with some sellers we were talking to not long ago, wanted 80% plus of payoff for loans. And in this pool, I think we were, you know, 60% or less of unpaid balance. So give you an idea of, you know, the drastic swing just over several months as people now are looking to, you know, get back to normalcy. 80% has never been normal, by the way, and you would not make money on those loans. So it's people just seeing who's going to bite because they gave the inclination there was little equity, little assets out there. And lastly, ignore the media hype. Real estate is cyclical. Every market, you know, has its ups and downs. Certain markets are more resilient than others. You know, like Florida, for example, areas of Florida typically have higher ups and bigger drops. You know, where I'm located, DC, typically has not as significant ups and not as significant downs. I was up in Boston. I kind of felt the same way up there as well. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to learn more? Go to 7einvestments.com and learn about how we are investing in mortgage notes. Subscribe to the podcast. And if you're an investor looking for passive income backed by real estate assets, book a call with myself or a team member to learn more about our Regulation A or Regulation D 506C fund offerings. Thank you all. Take care. Catch you on the next one.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show and leave us a review.